Good morning. Good morning to you too, Rolene Marks, talking to us from Israel.
Good
How are
morning.
You?
I tell you, I needed that little dance, Hakaramela. Oh, yeah, I haven't put my teeth in this morning, Howard. One cup of coffee. What's going on? What a week it has been.
What a week it has been indeed. All right, so Israel is, it's not looking good as far as COVID-19 infections are concerned, and it's also not looking good in terms of government response to it, whereas the first time round, there was definitely the sense that people were in it together, that although the measures were harsh, they were real, they were important, there was support. I'm not getting that sense at all now. It seems, I won't say as chaotic as here, but it certainly isn't being very well perceived.
You are so much more diplomatic than I am. Right now, it's a balagan. It's a big mess. A lot of criticism this week towards the Prime Minister and his government and the way that they're handling the crisis, because there's a lot that they are not agreeing on in the Knesset, and the whole reason that the move to push the coalition through as quickly as possible was so that we could set up a very, very important crisis committee in the Knesset to sort out COVID-19. And since Saturday night, there have been mass protests around the country calling on the Prime Minister to step down and also criticizing the way that he is handling the issue economically. I mean, the stats are just rising and rising every single day. Well, we've also heard from the Defense Minister, Benny Gantz, who's also the alternate Prime Minister, him saying, you know, please give the Defense Ministry more authority. The first time around, the Defense Ministry under Naftali Bennett did have a lot more authority, did have a lot more say in how the crisis is or was being handled. And a lot of people actually calling for Naftali Bennett to be brought in because he has an extremely rational, no-nonsense way of dealing with the issues. And a shock announcement coming from the Prime Minister the other night that every citizen will be getting 750 shekels. And that's a shock announcement because for some people who have been terribly affected, it's really in essence about $200, and it's not enough of a bailout. And we've heard from the leader of the central bank of Israel saying this is not the smartest way of trying to alleviate some of the economical burden. You know, there are also other people that haven't been as affected. So, you know, it's a system of checks and balances and logistics, and how do you plan to do that? Now, last night it was announced that we will be locking down on the weekends, which creates an even bigger balagan. You know, it's a blanket lockdown. The malls will be closed. I mean, Howard, I love that this is starting from 5 p.m. The malls are closed anyway from 5 p.m. The gyms are closed anyway from 5 p.m.
That is too funny.
But where it really, really hits some of the small businesses, especially in tourism and in the hospitality industry, restaurants that are open on the weekend and now will be restricted to take out at least until Sunday morning when the gyms reopen and so do the malls. You know, the fact that we've only had 35 cases attributed to this, to gyms being open is another whole debate. But we do have a epidemiologist saying, you know, don't be ridiculous. You are actually going to create more harm than good with this lockdown. So that's where we are. And it's no wonder that some of us might need a whiskey at not even 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. So what is likely now going to, I mean, I saw even responses of negativity to the money, the money that each family is getting. There's just a general discontent. And unfortunately, once that happens, then everything is viewed through that lens. It's very hard to pull it
back. We've even seen it here because it's not just unique to Israel, because here, I think during the first two months, actually, we were very confident in government and we were in support of all the measures that were taken with the lockdown. And then now it's a balagan. Everybody's protesting. Restaurants are going to protest next week. Taxis aren't satisfied with the money that's been given to them. it really is chaos. So I think that's just the general.
Yeah. So once, because once it turns to that negative, then it's very hard to pull it back.
Well, this is exactly the problem. And Zanati, you say it so perfectly. And, you know, if we look around the world, I don't envy anybody who has had to lead a country through this pandemic. I mean, I think the closest we have had to two leaders, you know, being strong, managing to kind of shepherd their countries through this have been Jacinda Ardern and Angela Merkel. Just saying, people.
Yes.
But they've also faced their fair share of criticism. But you know, guys, as we say in Israel, if we can't criticize our government, which is our national sport, you know, then what's the point?
Yeah, what's left? Yeah, it's true that. You know,
well, no chocolate logs, guys. That is traumatic.
I know. One of our listeners said, cancelling chocolate log is like cancelling birth control. No, it's really not.
I think it is that serious.
No, Zanati, stop it.
I'm with Zanati. It's enough now. This cancel culture has to stop.
It has to.
And then somebody sent me a thing about peppermint crisps as well. Now, I'm not a massive peppermint crisp fan, only in a pudding. But then I realized they were just saying sort of some of the slabs, like the 150-gram slab. So that's okay. That's okay. We shouldn't panic about things like that. All right. I want to talk to you about Barry Weiss. So we started speaking about it a little bit earlier in the week. We mentioned it when the news broke. We chatted to Howard Zakstein about it. Barry Weiss, of course, is an editor at the New York Times. She comes from the Atlantic. Very well respected, I would say, center, slightly right. I don't know, Roline, where you would place her, but I think it's irrelevant. In truth, where she is, she's just a voice. And she is a voice with an opinion that some of the woke far left might not agree with. And for that reason, and for the reason of her being Jewish, she has been vilified, she has been targeted, and ultimately, I think, wrote one of the most important pieces of 2020, certainly from the perspective of anti-Semitism and racism, and has now left. Roline, give us your thoughts on all of this.
Well, first of all, as a journalist, as an analyst, and certainly you guys as well, Zanati, Howard, broadcasters, it is our role to question, to push back, to expose areas in society and government or whatever that we feel, you know, there's a darkness or that there needs to be, the issues need to be addressed. Barry was working at the New York Times. She was an opinion editor. She's a voice that is very, very well known in Jewish circles, but also in the United States. She has been called on numerous shows, including Bill Maher, various others, to opine on various issues. And I would put her, you know, probably center, and depending on the issues, which is where I think, you know, certainly where I stand, and I can't speak for you guys, but I think that any of us who try and bring a rational approach, we sit in the center, and depending on the issue, we'll maybe have a more conservative or liberal view. But the point here is bullying and the creation of such a toxic environment at work that she felt compelled to leave. And her resignation, and I urge everybody to read it, is exactly what Howard said. It's one of the most important pieces of this year with regards to anti-Semitism and racism. It was quite a indictment against the New York Times and the way that the newspaper is running. And it's no coincidence that we've seen the slide into almost pandering to the far left by the New York Times, and this is the result. The New York Times in the last couple of years has given a voice to people like Ahmadinejad, Peter Baynard, who just weeks ago wrote a very, very, very contentious and flammable piece saying he doesn't believe in a Jewish state. You know, regardless of the politics, you might think of another country, you wouldn't say that you don't believe in their right to exist. And of course, you know, nothing irks Israelis more than somebody living in Manhattan who's never served coffee, let alone a day in the IDF, or pay taxes here, or dealt with what we've had to deal with on a daily basis, telling us how to live our lives. But then we get back to Barry, and she says she's been called a racist, she's been called the Nazi, and she's been criticized for writing about the Jews again from her colleagues. And it's very, very serious, because it's not just about the shutting of a voice, which is what we're seeing all too often now in the media. It's that credible news sources like the once venerable New York Times now take their lead from Twitter. And I know we are all active on Twitter, and you know, sometimes I worry that anyone should take their lead from me, you know, when I share some of the content or fight with some of the people. You know, it's a place you go to engage. It's not where it shouldn't be your news source. And also very worrying is that journalists, her colleagues, in an industry where it used to be that, you know, we spoke truth to power, has now become all about the clickbaiting, about what's going on in Twitter, and if you don't share my opinion, you effectively have to be bullied and cancelled.
Yeah, yeah, and that is what that is what's happening, and there's just an incredible amount of bullying, and the more this happens, we saw this developing at the New York Times just a few short weeks ago with the BLM protests, where some of them had turned violent, and there was an article or an op-ed by, and I can't recall the Republican his name, but he suggested bringing in the army. And whether you agree with him or not is completely irrelevant. He is entitled to a view, same as somebody on the other side is entitled to a view that might offend you. But we don't really, you know, and he of course the New York Times issued an apology around that, and then the editor of the opinion piece was forced to step down, and they actually made the statement that they are going to be providing a more narrow set of opinions or range of opinions, and that is deeply, deeply problematic for a paper that holds itself to the standard that the New York Times claims to hold itself to.
Well, this is it. You know, you and I have spoken so often over the years, and I think that Ricky Gervais has, the comedian, the writer, summed it up properly, because he's also gone on the offensive against this cancel culture and the canceling of opinions, where he says, just because you are offended doesn't make you right. And you and I have spoken so often about the need to have uncomfortable conversations, the need to engage. You can't just shut down people because they have an opposing opinion. And this is where the New York Times and other publications are headed into very, very dangerous waters. I mean, you know that I hate when people say it's the leftists or it's the rightists. You know, they're both two sides of the same bird. And, you know, we're losing the ability to understand nuance, to engage, to look at the issues, and especially when it comes to the Middle East. You know, we're not as black and white as people like Baynard and others at the New York Times would have you believe. I mean, in fact, we are, you know, neon yellow with purple squiggles and pink dots. That's how complicated the situation is here. But the dangers of newspapers like the New York Times, which have these reputations, when they start moving and admitting that they're moving into a more narrowed point of view, we are headed into very, very dangerous waters.
We don't have a lot of time, but this leads me to another aspect of Jews in media that I thought was interesting this week, and that was the hashtag Jewish privilege. Can you just give us a sense of what that was about?
First of all, when you said Jews in media, I just had the opening credits or the closing credits of Mel Brooks with the Jews in space.
I know. I was thinking, why does that sound familiar to me? As I was saying Jews in media, and I'm thinking, hold on, I've heard this somewhere before, but it was Jews in space. Yes. Thanks, Mel Brooks.
Thank you for that comic relief. But yes, so what was started by white supremacists, you know, hashtag Jewish privilege, because it was, you know, apparently very privileged. I remember being so privileged when I was, you know, not allowed to join those sports clubs and certain clubs as a little girl because they had a J and A policy. The incredible, and you're a friend of his, I'm a friend of his, Hen Mazig, decided to turn that on its head, and first, and it was actually shattering. Many of us started sharing our experiences growing up and still experiencing today anti-Semitism. I mean, just because I live in Israel doesn't mean that I don't experience anti-Semitism from around the world, including being told it's such a great pity that when rockets are fired, they have missed me and I'm still alive. You know, this is the kind of rhetoric that we all hear, whether it's a microaggression, you know, you don't look Jewish, to some of the more outrageous and offensive comments. And then something quite extraordinary happened. We all started to look at the positive things about being Jewish, and you know, people sharing stories about their heritage. A very, very close friend of mine sharing his that on the one side of his family, it was virtually wiped out during the Holocaust. But on the other side, he's a seventh generation Israeli whose family founded Neve Tzedek in Tel Aviv. You know, my own personal story, you know, that I am an adopted child, that my roots are apparently Moroccan-Israeli, but I grew up in South Africa in an Ashkenazi Jewish home. How blessed am I to have these incredible traditions, and now I live in Israel, and so many other stories. And it's quite an incredible moment of how we can take something so painful for so many of us and turn it on its head, use it as a teachable moment, very important, and turn it on its head and start talking about the positive.
And that's really the point, is that that's when a conversation becomes a conversation, because when people share experiences and then other people reading it are able to actually try and understand it. And that's really the positive side of social media, if we can allow it to be that. It isn't about hate. It isn't about accusing other people, but it's actually very simply about experience.
And can we just give a shout out to the incredible Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Zach Banner, who've also taken a stand this week about this very thing, about not being apathetic, about having engagement and discussing and learning at a time where things are very, very sensitive. And poor Zach Banner, he has been inundated, guys, inundated with challahs from around the world.
Absolutely awesome, because we say it best with food. It is 8 o'clock. Rolene Marks, thank you as always. We'll catch you next week. Have a fantastic weekend. Stay safe, stay healthy, and try and disconnect from the madness of the world that we live in. It is 8 o'clock.